Thanks to a new set of guidelines out this week, tens of thousands of Americans may find themselves with a new diagnosis of hypertension, more commonly known as high blood pressure. The American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology will now consider an adult with a blood pressure reading of 130 over 80 as having stage 1 high blood pressure.
And that's down from 140 over 90 and means that nearly half of American adults will now fall into the category of having high blood pressure. These new blood pressure guidelines are the first in 14 years.
Dr. Patrick Remington joins us now to talk about the new guidelines and what they mean for you. He is Associate Dean of Public Health at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first, what leads the medical community to reassess blood pressure guidelines like this?
Well, we've always known that the higher your blood pressure is, the higher your risk is of having a problem, a cardiovascular event like a heart attack or a stroke. And these categories were set decades ago for clinicians to be able to define somebody as being hypertensive or having hypertension. And that then allowed treatment guidelines to follow. And over the past several years, there have been studies that have shown that when you aggressively treat people below the traditional measure of high blood pressure, which was 140 systolic, that if you brought that down to 120 through aggressive treatment, that there were about 25% fewer cardiovascular events, strokes and heart attacks. And that's a significant decline. And so the feeling is that it's worth redefining high blood pressure from that older measure, the 140, down to 130.
So how many people are going to be affected by this, thinking they were in a healthy range and now in this low end of an unhealthy range?
Well, it won't change their blood pressure measure. Mm-hmm. Maybe it will increase it because they'll be more upset and nervous about it. But it will simply change the number of people who have now been classified as having stage 1 hypertension. And that's about 30 million people. That's a lot of people. Now, the good news is that when you follow through on these recommendations, that most of those will be recommended to improve their diet, cut out salt, certainly don't add salt, and look for low salt options, eat more fruits and vegetables and more whole grain foods, and get exercise with an aim of losing a few pounds. And about 80% of the newly named hypertensives will have these lifestyle interventions recommended.
And there's a chart, and you've got it in front of you, that shows treatment for all the different levels over that healthy level. And it seems like lifestyle is part of the puzzle for everybody who has high blood pressure. Is that right?
Absolutely. Even for people with high levels of blood pressure or on treatment, lifestyle is always part of the prescription. But for some people, those are hard things to do. Mm-hmm. And for others, they don't work. And so then medicines need to be used.
So yeah, for those new people in that, I guess, 120 to 130 range, the first number in your blood pressure there, you said about 1 in 5, I think, might need medication. What is the state of medication for blood pressure? What's out there?
Well, it's actually 120 to 129, and that now used to be called prehypertension, and it's now just called elevated blood pressure. It's really the 130 to 139 that's stage 1 hypertension. And the fact that I have to have a chart in front of me to remember these numbers and we get them wrong, what I encourage people to do is to simply continue to have a dialogue with your primary care provider about your blood pressure. Make sure that it's measured correctly. Sometimes we go in and they measure it over our clothing just after we've been in the exam room. There are good ways to have blood pressure measured. You should be resting. You should be seated. And it needs to be measured on several occasions. And once that's done, then have a conversation with next steps with your physician. But the numbers, I think doctors and health systems should pay attention to the numbers and the treatment. It's hard for people to keep track of this.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at new blood pressure guidelines and how they can affect our treatment. And that seems to be key. There is this handy chart with the numbers and the treatments, but it's a consultative process between patient and doctor and looking at other elements of health risk. Is that right?
Absolutely. And let me point out, there is some debate in the scientific community about these guidelines. For example, the studies were done in very, very controlled settings with people who were in clinical trials. In real life, sometimes it doesn't work that way. Patients might not be as compliant with respect to medicine. Sometimes the blood pressures that are measured in actual clinical practice are different than they might be measured in a clinical trial. So there's some people who have doubts that this will actually translate into changes in clinical practice. It will really take some time for people to realize that the guidelines are different, that treatments may be recommended, but more importantly, pay attention to the lifestyle recommendations that you know will come.
When should doctors be considering, though, a prescription, a medication for blood pressure?
Well, if you're in the stage one hypertension, so your systolic number is more than 130, and if your diastolic, the lower number, is more than 80, then you could have a conversation about whether it's lifestyle or whether you might need medications. Certainly medications have always been recommended for people with high blood pressure, 140 or 90, over 140 over 90. If your blood pressure is consistently over 140 over 90, you should definitely be in conversation with your physician and probably on medicine.
And these are, in some cases, medicines that have been around a long time. They've got a long track record of research and use out in the wild, right?
Yeah, they are very well known, very widely prescribed, but they can cause some side effects. First of all, for some people without insurance, they have a certain cost. There's sometimes co-payments that come along with them. And sometimes people have side effects, maybe dizziness in the elderly. So again, the conversation with your physician is really important to think about the balances of the benefits of medicine versus not.
And that's always a question when we expand the scope of people who are being diagnosed, the trade-offs between the benefits of a medication and those side effects. Is that something that's weighed in these new recommendations?
It is and it isn't. sometimes translating clinical trial results to actual practice, we find more costs in actually delivering these guidelines. The actual practice of measuring blood pressures and following up on patients can be more complicated than we think. And actually, compliance rates go down in actual practice. So the costs are ideally considered, but it's sometimes hard to actually know what it's going to be when it's in actual practice.
How about drug interactions, especially as you mentioned with the elderly, with seniors? They might be taking the blood pressure medication and a statin for cholesterol and an antidepressant or a long list of potential prescriptions.
Yeah, and certainly having other chronic conditions will increase the likelihood that you may need treatment, because the bottom line is that in this important study that just occurred, that they compared people being treated aggressively with people not being treated aggressively at the 140 level, and they found that 25% reduction in risk. But that means it went from 8% to 6% over 4 years. So you could say that you need to treat 50 people to save one cardiovascular event. And the 49 people that you're treating without benefit could have side effects. Certainly they have costs, they have visits to the doctor. So that's the balance that we need to play at this border between clearly treating high blood pressure and considering people at on the border.
We're talking about new blood pressure guidelines from the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology and what they mean for doctors, patients, and you. Our guest is Dr. Patrick Remington, Associate Dean of Public Health at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. Are you now considered to have high blood pressure under these new guidelines? If so, do you have any questions about what that means? If you're someone who has had high blood pressure for a while, what are you currently doing to try to get it under control? You can join us at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Patrick Remington of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. The American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology have issued new guidelines on blood pressure. And if you weren't considered to have high blood pressure before, you might have it now.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about these new guidelines and what they mean. Do you have questions about how these guidelines work, how they'll change medical care? Have you struggled with high blood pressure yourself? What have you tried working with your doctor to try and get those levels down? If you are in healthcare, what kind of conversations do you have with people about their blood pressure? Are you watching these new guidelines yourself? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Remington, I want to get back to the lifestyle side of this. You mentioned nutrition, the food we eat, of course, and maybe the food we don't eat for that matter, too. There's smoking. I imagine exercise is part of this. We've talked about a lot of different health topics over the years, and these seem to help in a lot of ways when it comes to high blood pressure, a stroke, obesity, diabetes. This is a nice catch-all there.
Yeah, certainly. hypertension or high blood pressure is a phenomenon we see as people age. But in other cultures around the world, it's not associated with age. So there's something about aging in America. We tend to gain weight. We tend to become less physically active, and even our diets change. That, combined with the high rate of sodium consumption in the West, leads to increasing rates of high blood pressure as we get older. And so that then becomes a major public health problem. Again, as you said, 46% of Americans, by this new definition, will be considered to have high blood pressure. That's on the order of overweight, which is now 67% of the America is considered to be overweight. So it's becoming almost a normative condition.
So if you're in your office talking to your doctor about blood pressure, that's a medical problem. When you're talking about half the population, that's a public health problem. What kind of public health solutions do you see for some of these underlying causes of high blood pressure?
Well, it's a great question. One is to work with industry to reduce the amount of sodium in prepared foods or restaurants. People put salt in foods because it makes the food taste better, but we know there's a risk associated with too much sodium in our diet. And so one thing is to just try and take sodium out of your diet yourself by not adding salt or adding it very infrequently. And the other thing is to look for changes in policies as to how much salt is put into foods. And the other issue is just the general recommendation to eat a better diet, eat more better foods, and fewer foods high in saturated fats, and to be physically active. Being physically active alone can improve your blood pressure. You don't have to lose weight. If you do lose weight, your blood pressure drops even more. But physical activity, good diet, and cutting sodium in your diet are three really important things to bring your blood pressure down.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Rich on the line with us in Neenah. Rich, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to bring up, Rich?
Well, with the people being diagnosed with hypertension, it's going to also put a strain on people's wallets by having to go into the doctor. And also, just trying to get into the doctor sometimes is difficult, just to get an appointment and that. I know personally, I used to have high blood pressure. I lost about 30 pounds, and now I don't take any blood pressure medication. I don't have to go in to the doctor every 6 months to have blood work and all that done to make sure everything's going fine. But it is a financial strain on a lot of people to do that.
Rich, thanks for the call. Congratulations on getting that blood pressure down. But that financial burden you touched on earlier, Dr. Remington.
Well, it certainly is. And congratulations on losing 30 pounds. It's very hard to do. But hypertension is one of the few chronic diseases you can actually cure by losing weight. 30 pounds is a tremendous amount of weight to lose. And it does reduce the need for medicine and, in Rich's case, eliminate it completely. Even a little more physical activity, even a little better diet and a little less sodium in your diet can drop your blood pressure a little bit and reduce the likelihood of you needing medicine.
Thanks a lot for that call, Rich. A lot of the attention in these new guidelines involves getting that blood pressure from say 130 down to 120 if you can. But how about those people with really high blood pressure, the 170s and 180s? Even if they can't get it all the way down to 120, is there some benefit to even getting halfway home?
Well, that was the debate in the medical community, was whether it was worth aggressively treating high blood pressure with people with 170 or 160 down to as low as 120. The evidence is that if you do it carefully, considering all these comorbid conditions and differences in the elderly, that you do see a reduction in heart attacks and strokes. Again, in actual practice, the medical community has to be very careful that the harms don't outweigh the benefits from more aggressive treatment of high blood pressure.
When we see a big announcement like this, this is one of those health stories that does make it into the mainstream news. But does it end up happening? Does this end up affecting what happens when that patient is talking to that doctor?
There's no question we're having a conversation now about high blood pressure. We might not have had that if these guidelines hadn't changed. I think it's important for people to realize that hypertension is a really important risk factor for heart disease and stroke. Those are incredibly important and common chronic illnesses, and everybody should be monitoring their blood pressure at least once a year at your doctor's office. And consider, if you have borderline hypertension or now elevated blood pressure, do some home monitoring. Pay attention to it and look for these lifestyle changes that can help bring it down.
And for people out there thinking, I don't even know what my blood pressure is right now, what's a good first step briefly to get started?
Well, the first thing is to visit your doctor. This is not a medical emergency. These changes of guidelines don't change how you should go in to see your doctor, how often you should see your doctor. But the next time you see your doctor, make sure that you pay attention to your blood pressure, how it's being measured, and what the numbers are. And then use those numbers in consultation with your physician as far as lifestyle changes.
It's a good place to leave it. Dr. Remington, thanks as always for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Patrick Remington. He's Associate Dean of Public Health at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us to talk about new blood pressure guidelines and what they mean for doctors and patients.